Right, it's that time of the morning where we are joined live from London by EWN correspondent Gavin Gray for a wrap of the top stories making headlines in the UK and Europe. Good morning to you, Gavin.
Good morning, Sarah Jane. How are things there?
Right. I mean, you know, they're all right. The weather's looking a bit grim. It was absolutely glorious yesterday. I mean, I am somebody who does not do well in the winter weather. I have had enough of it. I'm over it. The sun came out yesterday. It was absolutely glorious. Today it's looking slightly grim. And as you can hear, I've been fighting a bit of a chesty type thing, not COVID. I had my eighth COVID test this week, Gavin.
Oh, gosh. I hope you're not having to pay for them, are you?
Well, half of them I've had to pay for, yeah. You have to pay for them here, yeah, definitely. But it just, eight times I worked out. I wonder if, and I'm not a health, you know, I'm clearly not a health worker or anything, but just, you know, you have to be careful, don't you? And I can't just start swanning around and potentially spreading the lurgy. Anywho, let's move on. How are you? Sorry, that was rude of me not to reciprocate.
No, I'm just thinking, how funny, we had lovely weather here yesterday and today, a sort of late burst of summer, and today's overcast as well. We're mirroring one another.
We're matching in our inclement weather. Right. Okay. Speaking of weather and sunshine and all that sort of thing, holiday bookings in the UK. So we're coming to the end of what would be holiday season. Well, we're at the end of it. No, we're way at the end of it, aren't we? September. Normally peak holiday season for the UK would be sort of July, August, kids' summer holidays, that sort of thing. But holiday bookings have surged since the government announced that foreign travel rules were being simplified.
Yes, they have. And indeed, you know what? I mean, I was looking at a hotel in the UK for a break later, either this week or next week, just for a couple of days to get away. And absolutely full. Everywhere is absolutely full, even though the schools have gone back. And it's just that pent-up demand. But there are those who are still determined to go abroad and have been pressuring the government to change the travel rules. Now, we did have a traffic light system, green for countries deemed to be very good, and okay for coronavirus, amber, where you had to do some self-testing and self-isolating, and then red, where you had to go to a hotel quarantine. And that, incidentally, is still how South Africa is viewed here, I'm afraid, on that red list.
Yeah.
The government has simplified it by an open list, countries you can go to and countries that are still on the red list. South Africa is still on the red list. It has been since the scheme started. And that means that you need to spend 10 days in quarantine in a state-managed hotel here in the UK on arrival, and that is at your own cost, which currently stands at 45,000 South African rand per person.
No,
that's
it's
a lot
madness.
For holiday cost, isn't
it? It's absolute madness. And in fact, I was looking, there was a thread on Twitter on, I think it was Friday night, where the UK government, it was a whole kind of back and forth, the UK government confirmed that if a person has been vaccinated in Africa, South America, or other countries, including the UAE, India, Turkey, Jordan, Thailand, Russia, you are considered still to be unvaccinated. Extraordinary. And must, this is exactly what you're saying, and must follow unvaccinated rules, the 10-day quarantine and test, blah, blah, blah. Come on. I mean, that's just absolutely absurd. Your Pfizer jabs are the same as our Pfizer jabs.
Yes, I think there's some additional work on the cases in that country, the number of hospitalizations in that country and the variants in that country. So it might be on that, but I do agree it's a funny set of rules. But for us in the UK going abroad, it is now much simpler and much cheaper. And that has led to an absolute explosion now in the number of bookings to go abroad. Even though school children are back at school, people are looking ahead to the half-term week, which will be towards the end of October. And this is why it's all suddenly got very busy. And it's very interesting to note, actually, that the pressure on the Prime Minister from the travel industry was immense for two reasons. First of all, that our furlough scheme, so that is where the government pays somebody's wages because of the pandemic and that the sector has basically gone into hibernation. And one of the biggest sectors for people with furlough is the travel sector. So that ends in another few days. Plus the fact of this half-term, the traditional sort of break coming up, I think the travel industry needed to be thrown a bone, and it certainly was thrown one.
And it's interesting as well that you say that, you know, because schools have gone back, and I don't know what the situation is here, because my daughter's not old enough for it to be relevant. But in the UK, you cannot just take your kids out of school willy-nilly. You have to get the school's permission. They don't like you to just take them out. And there was that whole sort of thing when these rules were sort of introduced a few years ago. And I know that relatives of mine had this, where they were saying, yes, but, you know, we can't afford to go in peak season because suddenly the prices go up astronomically. So that's why we're doing it. Or, you know, we've got relatives who we need to go and see, and their school holidays are X, Y, and Z, and we're trying to. So, I mean, it's not that they're risking a lot, mums and dads, and you can be fined, can't you? If you continue to flout the rules regarding your child being at school, you can actually be fined for that.
Yes, and very, very substantial fines as well. I think the problem was, Sarah Jane, it was becoming almost an epidemic. People were just away from school more than they were at school. And I think the then education secretary thought, this is ridiculous, it's got to stop. Yes, holiday companies charge more during the summer holidays. Of course they do. It's supply and demand, and they're going to put their prices up. But there were cases of parents just in the middle of terms saying, right, well, we're going away for 2 weeks. And the problem, of course, for teachers was trying to get the children to catch up. Education standards were falling. I just think that the government thought, right, we're going to stamp on this. And there were some very, very high-profile cases where parents were fined many thousands of rand for taking their children out without permission.
Yeah, for sure. Sticking with COVID, and Italy has become, I think it's the first country, to make it compulsory for all workers to have a so-called COVID green pass. What is that?
Yes, so basically you have to show that you have either been double vaccinated, you have to have a negative test, or show that you have recovered from the virus and have therefore got antibodies in your system.
In order to go to work?
Yes,
right.
In order to check in and go to work.
Yeah.
They are a first for Europe. They are some of the strictest measures in the world, and anyone without this pass is going to face suspension from work. And this isn't just state or government-run sectors. This is all businesses, with the employers having to enforce it. And also, the government is saying, right, and if you are suspended from work, your pay will stop after 5 days. We're not having people, be suspended indefinitely on full pay. So it comes into force in a month's time, the 15th of October. And it really, of course, is saying to everyone, you need to get vaccinated. And there has been a massive sudden bookings in people trying to get vaccinated in Italy. These green pass certificates are provided both digitally and on paper, but they are already required in Italy to go into a train station, a cinema, a restaurant, a gym, and a public swimming pool.
Quite right.
And school staff are also required to show a pass, with some teachers reported to have been turned away. Now, the Italian government is playing down the fact that so many people are going to lose their jobs, because they're saying, no, what's happening is so many people are now getting vaccinated. But this is, without doubt, one of the strictest regimes in the world, I suspect.
So let me get this right. So this is if you want to go into your workplace, which presumably most people do want to do because you need to earn a living, you have to either provide proof of vaccination or prove that you have a negative test. So if you are not going to get vaccinated, that's going to get very, very expensive for you, presuming, I mean, I assume that you have to pay in Italy, do you? Or maybe not, because their health system's pretty good, I believe. So maybe you don't have to pay. Or recovery from the virus. But that would be a negative test, isn't it? That the only way that you can prove that you've recovered from the virus is by a negative test.
Yes, and my understanding is that actually, because they're going to, if you refuse to be vaccinated and you keep saying, well, I'm going to keep getting tested, no, you do have to pay eventually, is my understanding. And of course, that will rack up enormously.
Yeah.
But the fines for the employers are roughly, I'm trying to do my math so quickly, 26,000 South African rand. So if you were found by the authorities to be employing somebody without a valid green pass, it is 26,000 South African rand per employee per time that you are found to have got somebody in your company. So it is extremely serious. But, it's not even 65% of Italians have been double vaccinated. And, of course, they started off with the elderly and the young as well. So there are going to be lots of people of working age looking at this deadline, October the 15th, thinking, I need to get vaccinated quickly.
I wonder if the anti-vax brigade, this might sway some of them, where they're suddenly actually it's going to hit them in the pocket and they're going to be like, oh, actually, you know what? I've taken that stand, but I need to pay the mortgage, so maybe I'll have a rethink of those conspiracy theories. And to France now, where an awful lot, 3,000 health workers have been suspended because they haven't been vaccinated. Right, why haven't they?
Yeah, and so this mirrors really what's happening in Italy. With France, they were one of the first to say, okay, all health workers now have to be double vaccinated. And that came into force this week, and it was made mandatory to be vaccinated for 2.7 million health care home, and also the fire service had to be double jabbed. Basically, some hospitals were reporting that almost 450 workers had to be suspended. And that did spark some protests outside the building. Many people are now saying, the president gave workers the notice of the change in rules on the 12th of July. So that did give everyone 2 months in the sector to get double jabbed. But, you know, some have resigned from their work. They feel so strongly that they don't want to do it. It is an issue we are wrestling with here in the UK. But here, again, in the UK, we are now telling all health and care staff they have to be vaccinated. And some in that industry, the care industry, are saying we were going to be incredibly short of staff because we do rely heavily on people from different ethnic backgrounds. And some of those ethnic backgrounds are refusing to be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So this is a very real problem for them. But what Italy and France are both saying is, once we told people that this was going to happen, all of a sudden the number of people who were vaccinated suddenly rocketed again. And I think there is a clear message here that obviously that is what is behind this drive. And it's not just those two countries and the UK as well. In Greece, unvaccinated public and private sector employees have to have COVID tests once or twice a week at their own expense. Here it is, back to cost. And that's why I asked you earlier about yours. You know, and these tests are not cheap, particularly if you have to keep doing them.
Yeah. No, I don't know if I dare talk about the rules here. No, I'll probably just avoid that. Somebody's saying, why should you go into work and possibly infect other people? I agree with the vaccination passport. Let's move on now, because I want to get to your last three stories, because they all are intriguing to me. Prince Andrew, Where are we now? I move in and out of this story. I think I watched that awful, well, it wasn't an awful documentary, but a documentary about the awful Jeffrey Epstein. And of course, Prince Andrew fingered in that. And there's been the whole drama around that, massive embarrassment to the royal family. Where are we at with that, Gavin?
Well, it looks like now that Prince Andrew is going to be served to the papers shortly. There was
really?
This whole thing.
And what will
that,
it be?
Yes.
What's the charge?
He's wanted for questioning.
Right.
He's wanting that they want him to basically, on oath, give his side of the story. Now, he says there is no story. I've never met this woman. But this woman says, no, I was sexually abused by Prince Andrew when I was a teenager. And I was, as it were, trafficked by Jeffrey Epstein, the wealthy financier, friend of Prince Andrew, who, of course, killed himself in prison in 2019. The pair were once close friends, but as I said, Prince Andrew denies even meeting the woman, Virginia Giuffre, says, you know, he can't remember meeting her. He'd never, that photo of them with his arm around her waist, he says he thinks it's been photoshopped because he can't see it. So, the American lawyers representing the claimant, Virginia Giuffre, have tried to serve Prince Andrew papers, which is what you have to do in these civil proceedings.
Yep.
But of course, Prince Andrew lives, as it were, in a bubble behind big gates and with gatesmen and security men. So they tried twice in Windsor, and on the second time, the security man accepted the papers. But then Prince Andrew, as his legal representatives, argued, no, no, that doesn't count. It has to go to Prince Andrew himself or to go through the British High Court. Well, the American judges stamped on that, saying, look, actually, okay, go through the British High Court, but regardless of that, you have been served here in the Americas because we have also now seen your legal team has been served the papers. And if they are representing you, then they represent you, and therefore they can receive the papers, and they now have. So the whole thing will, I think, eventually crawl on its way to court. But what Prince Andrew's legal team are saying, they believed Virginia Giuffre signed a document with Jeffrey Epstein in which somebody paid Virginia Giuffre money in order for it to end, the accusations to end there and then. That document with that detail has been basically closed and sealed, and Prince Andrew's legal team want it reopened in order to be able to fight his case. Either way, for a man who claims he's had got nothing to hide, etc., plenty of people looking at this thinking, why is he being so difficult to actually talk to them? We will see.
Yeah. Speaking of things being closed and sealed, the Duke of Edinburgh's will is going to remain secret for nearly 100 years to protect the dignity and standing of the Queen. Why?
Yes.
What?
Yes, for at least 90 years. It's been a convention for a century that the death of a senior member of the royal family has asked, the court asked for their wills to be sealed. Now, this was not the case with Diana. Diana's will, Princess Diana, was made public. I think that's partly because she wanted it to be. But Prince Andrew's, if you think as well, incidentally, the Queen Mother, we didn't see her will.
Yeah.
Princess Margaret, the Queen's sister, we didn't see her will either. And so I'm afraid this is a convention going back to 1910. Prince Francis of Teck, the younger brother of Queen Mary, was the first to have his will sealed afterwards. And they just say it's because it could be, you know, of huge publicity and distress to the royals, not very dignified, particularly, of course, if various portions of the will have been led to people that you're surprised about, or that the proportions don't reflect the number of children equally, etc., etc., etc.
Or if there's more children than we possibly thought there might be.
Well, absolutely. And we're going to have to live a long time to see this through.
You never know, though, do you? And I'm not suggesting, before all the royalists come for me, or even the royal family themselves, because I know they're all enormous fans of Weekend Breakfast, before everyone comes to me. I'm not suggesting for one minute that the Duke of Edinburgh had illegitimate children. But if, for example, a senior royal did, and it might be included in there, can you imagine? Can you imagine the scandal? The scandal. Mm. And then just finally on this, a very small fraction of some of the biggest employers in the UK have revealed their ethnicity pay gaps. First of all, just tell us a little bit more about those gaps. And why? Why aren't they revealing?
So a couple of years back now, the government decided that all big companies here in the UK should actually have to fill in a form to say, what are the pay gaps between various ethnic groups in your company? So the big question, of course, is if two people do the same job and are at the same role and same level of experience, then it doesn't matter their ethnicity. They should be paid exactly the same. But, of course, it brings to light another question is, are all your ethnically diverse people spread evenly in seniority through the company? And, of course, still, sadly, that is not the case. Lots of cleaners will be of one heritage, whereas there are probably lots of white males at the top of many of our businesses.
Mm.
But it was all supposed to be done and out in public. And then we find of the 100 largest UK-listed employers, only 13 have actually revealed it. And among those that have published their figures, British Land, which showed a pay gap between white and ethnic minority staff of more than 27%.
Sure.
British Telecom, which does our phones, of course, reported a pay gap of 5.7%. So that's slightly better. NatWest, one of the banks, reported 14%.
No.
But, of course, as I said, this is slightly misleading because it depends how you calculate it. Is it mean or median average? I don't want to get too mathematical on it.
Yeah.
But there are different ways of calculating it. And, of course, what it doesn't reflect is people's seniority within that company. But nevertheless, for only 13 of 100 to report it, that's not good.
Yeah, poor show, poor show. I'm stunned that British Telecom even still exists. Thank you very much indeed, Gavin. Always nice to chat. We'll chat to you again next week. Gavin Gray with the UK Report for us this morning.